Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is very excited that this is our 50th episode. Yay! I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web, and the Team Legal Podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So the Department of Justice this week announced in a court filing that it would no longer defend the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, against claims for the literal 11 billionth time by conservatives that the law is unconstitutional. It's the latest ridiculous and political about face from Trump's Justice Department. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the Republican lawsuit challenging the ACA. We're going to explain just what's at stake in this challenge. And we're going to talk about why Chief Justice John Roberts may be the only one to save us from this totally bonkers legal challenge succeeding. John Roberts going to save us, Jess.
I know.
Yikes.
Imani, can you believe that the ACA is nearly a decade old and Republicans have spent all of that time challenging it in court and, you know, mostly losing?
Yeah, mostly losing until now, that is.
Right.
A group of states led by Texas and, in addition, two individual plaintiffs asked the judge to wipe the ACA off the books. And that judge, noted whack job Reed O'Connor, said, sure, why the hell not?
I mean, really, this latest challenge is truly their most unhinged yet, and it has to do with our old friend, the individual mandate. Remember the individual mandate, Imani?
The individual mandate. Maybe we should talk about what exactly the individual mandate is for our listeners who don't recall.
I mean, you know, you guys think administrative law gets me excited? Let me tell you how excited I get to talk about the Affordable Care Act and insurance law. All right.
She literally just pushed her nose, her glasses up her nose, by the way. I'm looking at her on the video and she just put her little glasses up her nose. It's so funny.
I sincerely did. I sincerely love the Affordable Care Act. So I am happy to explain the individual mandate. And it's been a while and it's in the news and it's important. So let's make sure folks understand it. It's the part of the ACA that requires people to either buy insurance or pay a penalty to the IRS if they don't. It's a super important part of Obamacare because it's designed to get people, as many of them as possible, into the health insurance market, which helps in terms of cost and spreading risk and all of those really nerdy, wonky things that, like, I get real jazzed up about it. So anyway, the individual mandate is super important, and it's a key part of the Affordable Care Act, without a doubt. And we've been fighting about it for, well, goddamn, almost 10 years now. So in the NIFB case, that was the very first challenge to the Affordable Care Act that Republicans lost, by the way. The Roberts Court upheld the individual mandate as a proper exercise of Congress's taxing power. Now, that launched, I think 1,000 attempts to repeal the ACA, all of which have failed.
Well, it was more like 50 attempts. I actually looked it up. It was a little bit more than 50, but it certainly felt like 1,000.
It did.
And
it was
they did. They all failed. Republicans tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to repeal the ACA and could not get it done.
No, they have not been able to get it done. And, you know, this is their attempt now. So we've got a group of states led by Texas. And like you said, these two individual plaintiffs who've sued the government. And this is what they're arguing. They say that when the 2017 Congress amended the ACA by essentially eliminating the tax penalty that I just talked about for the individual mandate, they made the mandate unconstitutional. Congress just did that.
I think it's important to sort of harken back to about a decade ago when people were really freaking out about the individual mandate and there was this huge discussion about whether or not it was a proper tax and whether or not it was fair to sort of quote unquote punish people for not buying insurance. And there was an entire discussion that made it very obvious that most people don't understand how insurance works.
Oh, yeah.
And how insurance requires the spreading of risk. And so for requiring people who would refuse to buy insurance to pay a little something into the IRS in order to pay for the insurance program, that was an important part of the ACA. But I digress. Back to you.
So important. And in fact, you know, at the time that this was going on, you know, I mean, I don't know, some of our listeners may not remember this or you know, when there was the fight over the ACA, Republicans came out and put like 9,000 pages on the dais and was like, who read this, and dropped it and, you know, made a big to-do about it because it's a big, long, complicated bill. I took great offense to that because I actually had to read that bastard. So my job at the time was not in journalism. I was working at a health law institute at a law school in Minneapolis, and one of my jobs was to track the ACA in every iteration through committee. And I was like, God damn it, you guys, I read that. And let me tell you, they spent a lot of time talking about just how necessary this is in terms of all of the things you said. So, you know, Republicans have zeroed in on it, on this case, right? Texas versus the United States. Let's talk about it a little bit. Republicans are claiming that by zeroing out this tax penalty that we just got real excited about for not having insurance, Congress rendered the entire law, all of Obamacare, all of it unconstitutional.
Like all 900 pages, all the pre-existing conditions,
all of it,
staying on your insurance until you're 26 and yada, yada.
Medicaid expansion,
exchanges, all of that goes right out the window because Congress decided to zero out the tax penalty because people didn't like the idea of having to pay a tax for not buying insurance. Okay, got it.
Basically, they're hoping the courts will do what Republicans haven't and been able to repeal this super popular law.
Which is not really the court's jobs. I mean, there's a word for that, right? Don't we call that judicial?
Oh, it's like right at the on the tip of
judicial
my tongue.
Activision. It's judicial activision. No, wait, sorry. Sorry, it's judicial activism, not activision. I'm sorry. Yes, got it. Okay.
All right, so this is a super important case and one that we're going to be talking about for a while. So let's give the listeners a procedural recap and catch them up to where we are so far. All right, so Texas versus the United States. We already said that Republicans spent like, almost all of 2017 trying to repeal Obamacare, right?
They really did. And it was a disaster for them politically because it turns out people like the ACA, notwithstanding the fact that some of those people found out that they liked the ACA after they realized that Obamacare was the ACA. But again, I digress.
I'll never forget that.
I really, really hate Obamacare, but I love the ACA. It's like, what? What are you talking about? But essentially, people like the ACA, and they hate insurance companies being able to do whatever the hell they feel like.
Right. So Republicans couldn't repeal the Affordable Care Act, but they did pass their version of tax reform, and as part of that, eliminated the individual mandate's tax penalty. They zeroed it out, right? So it's just, it's zero. That opened the door for conservative attorneys general in 20 states, led by Texas, naturally, to put forward a novel legal theory. And it goes a little something like this.
Hit it.
Because...
Sorry.
Just gave myself jazz hands right there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm your hype woman. Hit it. Let us know.
You would actually be the best hype woman. Because there are no longer tax penalties associated with the Affordable Care Act, and because the Obama administration successfully argued in court, the entire law must stand or fail on the existence of those tax penalties when it defended the ACA the first time around. The ACA is now unconstitutional. Because Obama won and Republicans zeroed out the tax penalty, the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional.
Okay, but that was a different Congress, right? So
is your brain hurting a little bit?
Like, that was a different Congress. That was like back then, 2010, 2011. Now we're in 2017. We have a new Congress, a new crop of jackasses in D.C., and when they zeroed out the individual mandate because people really didn't like having to pay more taxes, that's all they did.
Right.
They said, you know, sure, Obamacare says you got to buy insurance, but you know what? You're not going to be penalized anymore for not buying insurance. But when they did that, they made it explicitly clear that they were not touching the parts of the ACA that people liked, the parts that protected people with pre-existing conditions, the parts that said that, you know, youngsters, did I just say youngsters?
You said youngsters.
Dad. I said the youngsters. The youths can stay on their parents' insurance plan until they're 26. They made it very, very clear during the hearings and the debate about this, the Tax and Jobs Cut Act, which actually zeroed out the mandate. They made it clear that's all they were doing. So what the fuck, Jess?
I mean, Imani, you are 8,000% correct. You really are. But one of the most conservative judges in the country, Judge Reed O'Connor in Texas, bought this argument hook, line, and sinker. And in December, he ruled the law, all of it, unconstitutional.
Which is like, what? You know what I mean? What?
That's the you know, like, we're kind of the, like, you know, some combination of the what and Shruggy guy in talking through this case, because your head hurts. Exactly. It's nonsense. But so that was a terrible ruling. And the case is now before the very conservative and, thanks to some judicial appointments, extra Trumpified Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is super great and awesome.
Super great and awesome.
But it gets even better. It gets even better. So back when Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, remember when he was Attorney General? I only miss him because I enjoy honestly saying Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III.
You mean Bilbo Bigot? That guy?
Bilbo Bigot. So back when Bilbo Bigot was AG, he made the decision that the Justice Department was not going to defend the Affordable Care Act against this lawsuit, right? He was like, nope, we're good. We're not going to do it. Go do your thing, Texas. Knock yourself out. So instead, a coalition of state Democratic attorneys general, led by California's Attorney General Javier Becerra, stepped in to defend the law. So that was bad that DOJ did that. But right. Amazingly, it gets worse. It gets worse.
Of course it does.
So this week, Bill Barr said, basically, hold my beer, and went one step further, telling the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that it agrees with O'Connor's ruling in its entirety. And it's the position of the Trump administration that all of Obamacare is unconstitutional.
Which is, it's, not only is it bonkers, but it's just so, it's obvious to me at any rate that either Trump is just willing to completely lie to his base, these people who actually like the pre-existing condition protections and they like being able to have their kids on their plan until they're 26.
Medicaid expansion has helped a lot of people in red states.
And he actually said that, like, he wanted to make sure that people had health care. I honestly believe that he wants to institute something that will forever be known as Trump care, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think he likes, you know, the healthcare protections being known as Obamacare, because he hates Obama and he's been trying to undo everything that Obama has done. So either, I don't know what it is, if it's ego or if it's just rank, like, malevolence, I don't know. But in any event,
I think the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. But in any event, it's terrible, and it's terrible for just so many reasons. We've had a decade of this law. People mm-hmm. like this law. People are insured because of this law. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But going back to pre-2010 health insurance days, are you serious?
So let's talk a little bit and break down the arguments here. What are Republicans telling the courts this case is about?
Well, you know, Republicans will tell you that this case is about the enforceability of the individual mandate after the tax changes that occurred in 2018, right? As we mentioned before, in 2017, Congress zeroed out the individual mandate when it passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which I'm pretty sure Trump thought of that name because it's so fucking basic. Like, I don't know, what are we going to call this bill? Tax Cuts and Jobs? Yes! Put totally. A stamp on it. Excellent.
Put a stamp on it.
So Republicans will say that because the individual mandate has been zeroed out, and because that mandate is a key feature of Obamacare, that the entire law should get unraveled. And they're saying essentially that the individual mandate cannot be severed, that is, removed or excised mm-hmm. from the rest of the ACA.
Okay, so severability is a legal concept. We should probably explain what that means, Imani.
All right, I'm down for that. Severability. So it's a legal concept that jurists use in interpreting statutes, right? So statutes have a lot of parts. We see this, for example, in anti-abortion laws all the time, right? So if you'll recall Texas HB 2, that's the piece of legislation that was the subject of the 2016 decision, Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt. It was this omnibus bill that had multiple provisions. It had a 20-week ban. It had an admitting privileges requirement. It had medication abortion restrictions, all stitched together into one bill. So the idea of severability, or severing one section from another, means that when you have these kinds of statutes that have a lot of moving parts, the courts can sever off one part of the statute. So, for example, in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, the court severed the admitting privileges part, ruled that that part was unconstitutional, but left the rest of the statute in place. So HB 2 was sort of split up, with bits and pieces being declared unconstitutional, but with major bits, like the 20-week ban, being not being upheld, but remaining, because those parts weren't challenged. Because I want to be clear, 20-week bans are unconstitutional. But the admitting privileges part was severed, and so the 20-week ban remains. So this is a common, well-established doctrine. Like, this is something that everyone understands, all lawyers and all judges, or at least they should.
You learn it your first year of law school.
Like, your first day, practically. You know what I mean? It's like they tell you where, like, the bars are, and then they talk to you about severability. And Reed O'Connor just decided to ignore this rule. And he said that because the individual mandate is unconstitutional, the rest of the ACA was too, even those parts that really have nothing to do with the individual mandate. But he said the mandate couldn't be severed from the rest of the law.
I mean, it's bonkers. And like, it's the like, well, damn, I guess we're done here. Like, I don't know. Like, that's not judging. That is not actually doing your goddamn job as a judge at all. And, you know, I mean, so, but that's a good way for us to talk about what's really going on here, right? What's the motive here? Not just in terms of the legal arguments. And I don't think I can say this part enough. This case is a Trojan horse to get rid of the ACA in the courts because conservatives can't get it done in Congress. Right. So they are doing that, right? And it's all about getting the courts to repeal all of the ACA protections, but to do so in a way that provides electoral cover, right? Wasn't me. They can pull the Shaggy. Wasn't me, you know? Like,
you just referenced Shaggy. We are dating ourselves. But you're right. I mean, it provides electoral cover. They can say, we didn't do it. It was, you know, hey, it was these rogue courts who are doing it. But I really want to get to one aspect of this lawsuit that really, really bothers me. And that is the fact that these plaintiffs, the plaintiff states, Texas and the others that are suing, and these two individual plaintiffs, they don't even have standing to be bringing this lawsuit.
They shouldn't even be in the door.
They should not be in court. They should have been summarily booted from the courtroom. And
summarily booted is a fantastic motion.
I move to have plaintiffs summarily booted from the courtroom. But for those of you who read my Boom Lawyer written explainer on standing, you know that you only have standing, that plaintiffs only have standing if they have an injury that the court can remedy.
Yeah.
If you don't have any injury, and if there's no remedy for whatever injury that you may have suffered, the courts can't do anything about it and they will dismiss your case.
Right. It's not an airing of the grievances. You can't just go in and bitch. You need...
It's not Festivus.
You need something the court can fix.
Right. And so here what we're dealing with is individual plaintiffs who have not been injured by this individual mandate because there is no longer a penalty attached to the individual mandate.
Right. So they're not out any money.
Right. They're not out any money. Basically, Obamacare is now just like a gentle suggestion that you should get insurance, right? Like, we're not going to do anything about it, but hey, man, bro, why don't you go out and buy yourself some insurance? You know, we're not going to do it. It's cool if you don't, because we're not going to make you pay any penalty or do anything. But bro, get some insurance. And these plaintiffs are saying that they are feeling sort of stigmatized or bullied into buying insurance, even though if they don't buy insurance, nothing will happen to them.
I'm speechless.
It gets more ridiculous. The states who are suing have made up some ridiculous horseshit about how the individual mandate, even though it doesn't attach a penalty to it, might somehow confuse people into thinking that they are required to buy insurance. And this confusion will cause them to sign up for state-run insurance plans like Medicaid or CHIP, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program. And if these people who otherwise would not buy insurance are confused by Obamacare into buying insurance, buying this state-run insurance, that's going to financially burden the state. They are predicating their standing, their claim for standing, on a hypothetical situation about hypothetical confused people buying hypothetical state-run insurance and then causing hypothetical financial burdens to the state. They have no proof that this will occur. They have no proof that this has ever occurred.
And can I just say, it is incredibly rich to have conservative states that push things like crisis pregnancy centers, sitting here and saying, the concern is people are going to be confused. Like...
Exactly.
I mean, it is...
It's, yeah.
Of course they are. Of course they are. And I mean, you're right. Like, the standing... They shouldn't be here. There's no injury. This is ridiculous. Like, we shouldn't be even doing this as our 50th podcast episode.
I know. But that's how hard up these conservatives have been to repeal Obamacare, that they're now just skipping over the whole legislative process and trying to get courts to do it. And, you know, we should talk about whether or not this will be successful, because this has been appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And the Fifth Circuit, as you said, is just hella Trumpified. And so who knows? The Fifth Circuit might be like, all right, sure. Let's just go ahead and go with this Reed O'Connor nonsense and just kick it. And, you know, that will kick it up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me just talk about the Fifth Circuit. We have seen the Fifth Circuit go rogue. The Fifth Circuit is no stranger going rogue, right? We did an episode about the Louisiana admitting privileges case where they decided to up and ignore Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt and say, you know what? Maybe it's cool that Louisiana has this admitting privileges law that's going to shrink the number of abortion providers down to one.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that the Fifth Circuit is, again, supercalifragilistic XB ala Trumpified... It means that there's a sporting chance that the Fifth Circuit is actually going to uphold O'Connor's decision. And then will it get to SCOTUS? What happens if it gets to SCOTUS, Jess?
I mean, it could definitely get to SCOTUS. This is part of what conservatives are hoping for. But it would be likely up to John Roberts to save the day. And listeners, sit down.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
I think he might do it, too.
Oh my God, optimism from the Team Legal podcast?
I mean, I don't know that I go that far, but...
All right, just maybe not outright pessimism then.
Right. No, I mean, I think that, you know, there is good reason at this point, I would say, to think that Chief Justice Roberts would, should the court take it, turn this away. And here's a little bit, I'll show my work a little bit. The Anti-Affordable Care Act votes that Robert has cast were in the birth control cases. So big surprise there. He hates contraception and, you know, misogyny is cool, that kind of stuff. Like, that is to be expected. But the birth control cases, Affordable Care Act challenges, right? They were part of that. All of his other votes have upheld the law. Another thing in our favor is that this legal theory here is so clearly bonkers.
It's just batshit.
It is. And it's like actual partisan politics masquerading as legal theory. And while I'm not going to say that the chief isn't a partisan, I am going to say that there's like a bridge too far, right? And I mean, the fact that the case is so clearly political has to turn a stomach a little bit. I mean, you know, go all the way back, the congressional Dems who are also jumping in to defend the Affordable Care Act here, they hired Don Verrilli as their lawyer to do that. And that name might sound familiar to folks. He was Obama's Solicitor General who successfully defended the Affordable Care Act to the Supreme Court. You know, so there's that. I think it's also important and in the weeds important to mention that there are no career members of the Justice Department who have signed on to this current position that the entire law is unconstitutional. Like the career folks, the day-to-day attorneys who are there grinding, they don't want their name on this stuff. And so that, you know, like they don't want any part of it. That is going to be something that for Roberts, I think also, I mean, you know, hopefully for all of them, but for him in particular, that is. So, I mean, I guess, okay, maybe that is
feeling a little optimism. I'll go with it in spring. But here comes angry black lady with the buzzkill. Nah. If for some reason Roberts goes along with this theory, it is hard to understate how much of a disaster it would be.
Yeah.
We're talking about, okay, healthcare accounts for nearly one-fifth of the United States economy.
Damn.
20 million people now have coverage thanks to the Affordable Care Act. A return to pre-Affordable Care Act days where medical bankruptcies were far more common, or at least a return to those days until the Democrats could get a new healthcare reform package in place. And given how much of a battle the ACA was, that's not going to happen anytime soon. It's not going to be an easy process. if Roberts goes along with this, a lot of people are going to be screwed. A lot of people. And, you know, and I have to say, personally, when I was in between jobs, I had to look to the pre-existing condition plan on Obamacare, and it literally saved me. I have a pituitary tumor that makes my hormones go bananas. And if it weren't for Obamacare, I might not be alive. So I know there are a lot of folks who are holding out for Medicare for All, who are holding out for single payer. And I agree. I believe we do need to implement those systems. I need folks to understand that the Affordable Care Act has saved lives. Mm-hmm. It actually has.
Well, so I guess the good news-ish in that sense is that we're still kind of a long way from a worst-case scenario. The case has to get argued at the Fifth Circuit first, and we're a little ways out from that. And then it has to go up to SCOTUS. So that would be, you know, next year at the earliest, right, is when the Roberts Court would be taking it up, and which means they'd be taking it up in an electoral cycle. So it's going to get interesting.
Yeah, it's a little baffling that Trump wants to raise this now, considering I think that was one of the reasons why the Democrats took back the House is healthcare. So now they're going to let all Democrats run on Trump wants to destroy healthcare? Okay, go for it. So as we close out here, let's talk about whose fault this is. Who is to blame for all this? And I'm going to start off by saying it's Reid O'Connor. Reid O'Connor is a jackass, and that may not be the most, you know, legalistic way to put it, but that's what I'm saying. He's a jackass. But Jess, you've been covering him and his shenanigans for a long time. So maybe you can explain the extent of Reid O'Connor's jackassery, if you will.
He is not a serious judge. Not a serious judge. Like, it doesn't matter that he's a conservative. He's not a serious judge. He's a partisan. And how do we know? Republicans file every challenge to Democratic policy they don't like in his district in Texas. Now, you know, we've talked about how, you know, challenges to Trump policies that are terrible have been filed in California, in Oregon, in Washington. And those are in the Ninth Circuit, which is traditionally more liberal. And yes, those states also have Democratic attorney generals who are there challenging them. So, and you know, those plaintiffs in those lawsuits are situated there with actual injuries, you know, so like those are legitimate lawsuits. Republicans file every single one of their challenges that they can in Reid O'Connor's district specifically. So it's not just that they're filing in Texas courts. It's that they're filing in Reid O'Connor's district court. Right. And so how terrible is he? I'll give you a little parade of horribles. O'Connor is the guy who issued a nationwide injunction blocking the federal government from enforcing Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act. And that's the part of the ACA that protects against discrimination in healthcare services because of a person's sex or gender. It is one of the most important civil rights provisions that we have. And O'Connor said, meh, no. He also issued a nationwide injunction blocking the Obama administration from enforcing guidance under Title IX that said trans students should have access to facilities like bathrooms that align with their gender identity rather than biological sex. Blocked. Most recently, and this one is so wild, most recently he declared, Imani, the Indian Child Welfare Act. That's the federal law that is intended to keep Native American children from being separated from their families. He declared it unconstitutional. All of it. He said that the statute was an unconstitutional mandate based on race and therefore violated the Equal Protection Clause. It discriminates against white people.
Jessica, white people are our nation's most precious resource, and I really am offended at this tone that you're taking, that somehow they're not deserving of the highest legal protections that our country can offer.
It's so wild. And I mean, look, evangelicals have been coming for the Indian Child Welfare Act for at least 40 years, and O'Connor handed it to him.
And isn't that because they want to literally rip indigenous children from their families, from their heritage and their culture, and then send them off to white evangelical adoptive parents?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, just getting that out there. I mean, it's foul. It's foul. It's
Catherine Joyce is fantastic on this. Everybody read her work in this area.
Oh yeah, Child Catchers, right?
Yes. So that is that guy. He is that guy. He is the guy that shows up and everybody's like, ugh. right? You know?
Yeah.
He was the one in law school who was probably like front row and arguing with every professor all the time and never right.
And never right, but always thought he was and was super smug about it. Yep. I know. Yes. I know that guy. I had that guy in like every one of my classes.
That guy is Reed O'Connor.
Then that guy is Reed O'Connor. Ugh, we all know a Reed O'Connor. So that's going to wrap it up for us today, folks. You know, our 50th episode was about how Republicans again are trying to kill the Affordable Care Act. We are never going to not be recording podcasts.
Time is a flat circle.
About the ACA. When aliens come, they're going to find time capsules with episodes of Boom Lawyer, and they're all going to be over the course of 30 years about the goddamn Affordable Care Act. But you know what? That's what we're here for. We will be here until the lights go out talking about how important the ACA is and talking about how we ought to have it protected. Until then, you can follow me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, Hegemommy. You can follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And to join us for the countdown to the end of days, join our Facebook group, Boom Lawyered. Answer the question and we will let you right in. And aside from that, we'll just see you on the tubes.
Yeah, thanks so much for 50 shows, folks. See you on the tubes.
50 shows. Woo, woo, woo. Burr, 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 burr.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason-Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.